The Citadel Cafe is proudly sponsored by TweakedAudio.com. For high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds, visit TweakedAudio.com and use our code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's TweakedAudio.com.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 118 for Thursday, September 25th. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I gather to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Back again, as promised, Mr. Lou Page.
And this is rather sooner than I expected.
Yeah, well, see, here's the thing. I'm working towards having some of my favorite podcasters on the show more often. I also said last time that you were on that it would not be so long before we had you back. So here I am making good on both promises at once. So
hey, I'm happy to be here.
You'll have to come back on again in April. So what's up, man? I mean, we know that you do Zombies Ate My Podcast. Did you guys record a new episode recently?
Yes, we did. We were a couple days late because one of our co-hosts got married this past weekend. Ooh. So we had to do the show without him.
And we should give a shout out to Ryan and Ashley and a congratulations on their wedding day, which was Saturday.
Saturday, September 21st, I think, or sure. The 20th.
Yep. We'll go with that.
Yeah.
And Ryan's been on the show before. So congratulations to those guys. Apparently it was a very geeky wedding, which is...
The photos I've seen, it definitely looked like it.
Yeah. I think my favorite bit was the Lego Men topper. For the cake.
Yes, yes.
I thought that was the Lego fig topper was very, very clever. I saw lots of pictures of like music and name tags and table settings and stuff like that that looked very wedding-y from afar, but also looked very nerdy up close. So
definitely. And he also lucked out this week. He did not have to sit through the awful show that Bob and I had to sit through this week.
Oh, what? So what did you guys watch?
We sat through the first episode of Z Nation on Sci-Fi Channel.
Oh, no.
It's atrocious. It's seriously, we're probably not going to watch any more of it. And I'd be really surprised if it makes it more than a couple more episodes.
Is it really bad? Is it like bad, funny bad, or just bad?
I don't think they know what they're doing.
Mm, so bad.
It's done by the people that did Sharknado.
Oh, dear Lord.
So sometimes it's really silly like that, and then the next minute, the lead actor is Tom Everett Scott from That Thing You Do, and like he's like a Hollywood actor, and it's like he delivers a serious line, and then a zombie baby attacks somebody.
Zombie baby?
Like, yes. And you're like, really? And then out of nowhere, there's a river of zombies. That people were just rowing up in a boat like 5 minutes earlier. Next thing you know, the river is full of zombies. And you're like, wait a minute. I'm not sure I'm going to watch any more of it.
Yeah.
It's really bad.
Sounds like a bad decision for Tom Everett Scott.
Yes. And the worst part is we've been covering it for a couple of weeks as news headlines.
Mm.
And I can't think of the actor. He was on Lost. He played... Walt's dad. He's also in the new Constantine show. He's playing one of the angels.
I know who you mean.
You know who I mean. And I can't think of his name. He has a really funny last name. But he's in it, and they played him as the lead for weeks in news headlines. They're like, oh yeah, him, Tom Everett Scott, and then this other guy. And it's all the news headlines. They kill him in the end of the first episode. And you're like, oh. Well, I guess he's not the lead anymore.
It's not Michael Dawson, is it?
No. Hold on. Give me a second. I'll tell you.
No, Michael Dawson is the character's name.
Yes.
Harold Perrineau.
Yes, yes.
Is the actor's name. Sorry, I did a quick Wikipedia search, and the name that they gave first was actually... It's funny, they call him by the character name on Lost before they give his real name.
Yes, they do.
Oh, wow. I imagine the people on Lost have got the same problem that the people that used to be on Star Trek have.
Yes, you know, they do.
They're always that
I know
person.
I know the actor that plays Sawyer. That's what people call him, Sawyer. And he's like, oh, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. He's doing some fun stuff, though. He was in a sci-fi show.
He was in a sci-fi show that got canceled.
Which means it was probably decent.
It wasn't too bad. It looked like it was going in some interesting directions, but they were a really slow start. It was really slow starting.
Yeah, it's kind of hard these days with, in general, not mine, and probably not yours either, but the general population has a very short attention span. And yes. If you're not delivering exactly what they want week one, then they just tune out. And it's probably because there's just so much content out there where back when there was only a few cable channels and people didn't have anything else to watch, you could do kind of a slow burn and really kind of get people hooked into something. Unless you've already proven yourself, like unless it's like from the creators of, Smallville and Arrow comes Flash, no one's really going to be on board if you don't have a decent track record. So speaking of, do you know when Flash starts?
I think it's in like 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay. So still.
And it was just announced the other day that Flash was originally greenlit for 13 episodes or something like that.
Okay.
12 or 13 episodes. And they've just greenlit 3 more episodes for this season.
Oh, cool. That's a good
sign. So it's going to be 15 or 16 seasons, episodes. Rumor is Gotham's success this week prompted them that they think they could get a couple more episodes. So.
Oh, very, very cool. Well, hey, since you mentioned it, I know it's something that you wanted to talk about, so we might as well just kind of dive into what we've been watching. And I missed it because I don't have cable, but you have caught the first episode of Gotham.
Yes, I have. And I didn't catch it on TV either. We have Hulu. I wish you guys had Hulu.
Yeah, I wish we had Hulu as well.
So I had to sit through commercials, and it's usually the same 3 commercials every commercial break, but...
Which can get rough, but still, yeah. access is better than none.
Right, and I got to watch it. So Gotham is obviously, it takes place in the Batman universe, but it takes place when Batman's parents are killed, and he's a child.
Oh, okay. So he's actually, so Wayne is actually in it?
Yes, he is.
Oh, cool.
And he's like 8 or 9.
Mm-hmm.
And it begins with the murder of the Waynes. And him and his parents, just like you see in the comics, they're coming out of the theater, they're wandering through a back alley, and...
Which is a dumb decision, by the way.
Yes, yes it is. And a guy comes out of the thing and goes like he's going to mug them. Wayne says, I don't want any problems, gives them the stuff, and instead of letting them walk away, he shoots them both and leaves Bruce alive.
Right.
The weird thing they do, and it's kind of the one thing that's the weakest link for me in Gotham, is they're trying to force feed a few too many Batman characters. Because while all this is going on, Catwoman, who is a child maybe a few years older than Batman, I'd say she's like 12.
Okay.
She just was wandering through some stands and she just pickpockets somebody and she's hiding in that alley and she witnesses the murder.
Oh, wow.
She's like climbed up on like one of the fire escapes and she sees everything. And now and every time they show Bruce Wayne, you see Catwoman in the background, like she's following him around. And I don't like that, but it's a pilot. So I'm assuming they're just trying to force feed. This is Batman. This is Batman. This is Batman, you know? Yeah.
And I know that it's, if not based on, is at least inspired by Gotham Central.
Yes.
Which was a series of comics from 03 to 06.
Yep.
And it was a procedural cop, comic, but then they set it in Gotham.
And this is very much that, but every time they get a chance to mention a villain, a Batman villain, they're in the background.
Yeah.
So... The lead character is Jim Gordon, obviously. Yeah. And he's the rookie detective that used to be he used to be like an army ranger.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like a war hero. And they do a very good job of not really telling you when this all takes place. Everybody's carrying flip phones.
Interesting.
And
well, that's kind of cool.
And the car that Gordon drives and the cops drive are like, they look, remind me of like 80s black Cadillacs.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. The kind of detective cars that you'd see really early on in like, Law and Order.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think they're trying to not tell us what time frame it takes place. And it's very interesting that they're taking that approach.
Yeah. Well, and the cool thing about that is that it limits the amount of like tech. So like the internet's not going to be ginormous. You know, they don't have to worry too much about just supervillains having like crazy technology. It's probably going to be a little bit more straight up cop work, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, and I can see their decision. Also, the Batman animated series did something similar where they did a lot of like Art Deco.
This reminds me exactly of the Batman animated series.
Oh, cool.
In its style.
Yeah, because that's good. I mean, that's a great series. And they did the same thing with the cars. Like the cars sort of looked like, you know, pseudo 30s, 40s, maybe a little bit into the 50s. Any kind of technology in the show was very like, you know,
could be anywhere.
50s serial Superman type, you know, rockets in the sky. And, you know, it was kind of ambiguous in terms of the date. And that way, if they did anything high tech, it just seemed really high tech.
Right.
You know, it's not until you get into like the Batman Beyond cartoons that it really starts to get super digital. Everything there was technology in the cartoon, but it was analog. Yeah. Well, with the exception of eventually, I think the Bat computer, but even then, like it was like one of a kind and not every office seemed to have one, you know, because I remember Batman in the cartoon would be going through file cabinets.
Yes. Yes.
Like not stealing data from computers. He'd be going through, you know, file cabinets in offices.
And then once in a while he had a computer he could talk to and it would give him data. Mm-hmm. But most of the stuff he got was from a file cabinet.
Yeah. 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 And it would make sense that if anybody's got a talking computer in Gotham, it's going to be Batman.
And now that you mention it, there's several scenes that take place in police headquarters, and Gordon and Bullock, who are sort of the lead actors.
Oh, cool.
Lead characters. They don't have computers on their desks, I don't think. I don't remember seeing any computers on their desks.
Huh.
So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Well, and again, like it harkens back to like the Law and Order shows, right?
Yep. And so the weakest link in the show for me was what looks like it's going to be the lead villain. And her name is Fish Mooney.
Okay.
And she's played by Jada Pinkett Smith.
Oh, God.
And she runs like, she's like the new mob boss in town for Francone.
Mm-hmm.
He was right from the comics, as far as I know.
Francone?
Falcone. Falcone.
Falcone, yeah.
Yeah. And it seems like he's not too crazy about her, and she wants to replace him.
Mm.
And her right hand is Oswald Cobblepot.
Okay.
AKA the Penguin.
Right.
And he's like a sniveling, whiny, like, looking to stab everybody in the back. And
yeah, so he's like worm tongue.
Yeah, and the character nails his character. The actor nails him perfectly. It's amazing.
Interesting.
Like, as soon as he walked, I watched it with my wife, and as soon as he walked on set and spoke his first line, you don't even know his name at that point.
Right.
My wife goes, "Oh my God, is that the Penguin?" And I went, "You got it." And I knew in advance that that actor was playing the Penguin. And I was like, wow. And they even refer to him as the Penguin. And they do this really cool thing where he's like, "I keep telling you not to call me that."
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting what they're doing. The other character that only has one line of dialogue, and he's after the Waynes are murdered, Bullock and Gordon meet with like a forensics guy who has like information for them for the police department, and that guy is Edward Nigma.
Mm.
He keeps trying to make them, like, and you know what's interesting, Bullock? Da 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 da. And he like tells them a riddle, and Bullock's like, I don't have time for your riddles. Stop with the riddles.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, Gordon goes, yeah, blah blah blah, and he knows the answer to all the riddles, and it like aggravates his character.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I can see that he's gonna be the weird like geeky guy that, you know, digs with the bodies or plays with the bullet shells that they find.
Yeah,
and stuff.
The forensic guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that could be interesting for his character. Would make when he, if they make him become the Riddler, it would make his character more interesting.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, I get why they have to kind of cram it all in. It's going to feel probably forced for the first episode or two. Hopefully it'll even out where they're only dealing with one at a time. But again, like it's like we said, that like people don't have the attention span for a slow burn. They kind of want to see what is Gotham going to give me this season.
A lot of it feels like they ham-fisted as many Batman characters into the show just so they could go, see, we're trying to do something cool.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of them will be in upcoming episodes.
I hope they stick with story and don't go too much on the cool. Because, I mean, they've got some great actors. I mean, Ben McKenzie of OC fame. Hey, you know what? Guilty pleasure. I watched that show before it eventually got bad. But I did enjoy it when it was on. And he's a good actor. Like, I really enjoy Ben McKenzie.
He is a great actor. My only gripe is there is one line he has with Bruce Wayne where they have a conversation and he says something. And it is very comic booky, but the way it's delivered, it's a little cheesy. Mm. But I was like, it's okay. It's a pilot episode.
Yeah.
I get what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I had to keep saying that. But overall, it was really good. I'm like really excited for next episode.
Very, very cool.
And I should say, Bullock is not the Bullock you know from the comics.
Oh, that's disappointing.
And the show. No, he's still gruff. And like a grouch, but Gotham is corrupt, and he's one of those cops that he's on the take, but not because he wants to be, but because he knows if he doesn't, he's going to get killed.
Right. Okay.
And so he's constantly telling Gordon, things don't work that way, Gordon. Things don't work that way.
Mm.
And Gordon's like, well, maybe it should. He's like, I'm not taking a bullet for it. And you're like, oh, okay. So he's a grouch and he's a jerk, but they've changed his character a little bit.
Right.
He's not the honest cop.
Cool. Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to check this out. I mean, I've been looking forward to it. I'm happy that it's got potential and that it didn't fall flat on its face, like whatever that other zombie show that you were talking about.
Z Nation.
Yeah.
Z Nation was terrible.
Oh, man. So is that it? Have you seen anything else that's like geeky, superhero-y maybe?
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. premiered the other night, and I watched that as well.
I've been meaning to watch. I've seen nothing of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Really?
Yeah, zero. It's one of those things that I just haven't had time for. I don't have access, so if I want to get it comes in roundabout ways that involve a lot of effort on my part.
Yeah.
So
And I'll tell you, it's worth watching, especially if you like all the Marvel movies.
Yep, yeah.
There's lots of tie-ins with it, and... But the problem is, the first, like, six episodes, maybe seven, can be a bit of a slog.
Hmm.
The pilot episode, I won't lie, the special effects are bad.
Hmm.
It almost made me stop watching right after the first episode. I rewatched it to see if it was as bad as I thought it was, and it really wasn't as bad. The special effects just put me off on the first episode.
Right. Well, I mean, I've watched Doctor Who. Everything's going to look amazing.
Yeah.
In comparison.
Yeah. And it starts slow, and by mid-season, you're hooked.
Mm.
And it's not just... By mid-season, it's not just Monster of the Week. Sometimes there is like a monster of the week, but it's somehow tied into the entire plot. And like the last five or six episodes are like one continuous story. And it looks like this second season is starting right in with, right into, it's a continuous story.
Yeah, and I think this is where, I mean, a lot of TV series, they can sometimes pull it off about midway through their first season, but quite often it has to be into the second season when they get into season-long or half-season-long story arcs. And that's when shows get really, really good. Because it's very difficult to tell a good story in 44 minutes.
Yes, it is.
You know? So, and it gets very episodic. And because things have to be almost patterned, because that's how writers work for television a lot of the times when they're writing episodically, you really kind of know how it's going to pan out because there's not enough time for it to resolve in a surprise. You know,
right.
Whereas if you're going with a season-long story arc or even like I said, a half season, you really can get into some interesting spots. There can be some suspense. Things can get a lot more complicated, which is a lot more like real life. And then people identify with the story. They get concerned because they're now invested, you know, 3 months
right.
into this thing, and they don't want character X, Y, or Z to die, or they don't want the villain to succeed, or, you know, however they're going to roll it. They did that with Arrow. Arrow hit a stride, I want to say, halfway through season one.
Yes.
And then all of season two was just one great big story. They have the flashbacks, of course, to kind of help move those things forward. But it really makes a big difference, especially when you're dealing with a pop culture show like superheroes, you know, Gotham,
yeah.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Arrow, Flash. Like, there's a lot of superhero stuff happening right now. I'm hoping that the market doesn't get oversaturated and that people are going to get bored.
That's my biggest worry. But if the season premiere of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. showed anything, this season they're not going to... It seems like the first season, as good as it was, it seems like they always pull their punch when it would be time to introduce someone that would be a Marvel character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they'd be like, and we hint at this guy. And you're like, oh, come on. And season two, it's not really a big spoiler, but they throw a real comic book villain in.
Oh, cool.
And the guy that they're chasing somebody, basically, they're trying to find a box.
Okay.
And it's them and this other guy chasing a box. The guy they're competing against to find the box, it's the Absorbing Man.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, wait, that's the Absorbing Man. Awesome.
Okay. I'm not familiar enough with Marvel to know who that is, but still.
He's one of Hulk's enemies.
Oh.
And he touches things and he absorbs their properties. Like, if he picks up a piece of metal,
oh,
he can turn into metal.
Right. I know who. Yeah, I've seen him in the comics before. I've seen people depict him in like a fight against the Hulk or something.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
And so he is the villain in the first episode. And it looks like he's going to be an overall character villain throughout the first season so far.
Very cool.
Because he kind of gets away. And you're like, oh, okay, looks like he'll live to fight another day.
Do you know if there's a Marvel movie coming out before the end of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season two?
I don't think so.
Yeah, me either. Is Avengers 2015 or 2016?
It is 2015.
So potentially the finale of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. might lead up to Avengers 2.
It could.
Because Avengers, I mean, I know, I don't know exactly how, but you'd have to be under a rock, you know, in our circles on the internet to not realize that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. directly connected to the Winter Soldier, the Captain America movie from last year.
It ties in, since you haven't seen the first season, I won't spoil it for you.
Sure.
But there's literally a point where you should stop watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes, and then go see the movie.
Go see the movie and then pick up where you left off.
Yeah.
And then you go, oh my God, the show and the movie, you don't need to see them, but if you've seen them both, like, everything clicks. And
yeah.
You go, oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah,
I can't
heard
believe
that.
They managed to pull this off and tie in the movie and the TV show together.
Yeah. So I'm kind of hoping that they do it again.
Definitely.
Yeah. So that's definitely another one that's on my list to check out. For me this week, it's been, certainly one pretty nerdy show. I started checking out Cosmos. And I had watched the first episode a long time ago and then never had a chance to go back. It's on Netflix in Canada. And this is the space documentary show hosted by Neil deGrasse Tyson. It is a harkening back to a show that of the same name that was on in, I want to say, the 70s.
Was it the late 70s, wasn't
late it? Late 70s, like early 80s, something like that.
Because I know it came out like just before I was born, I think.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I've never seen the original series. It wasn't part of my childhood. But the cool thing was it was part of Neil deGrasse Tyson's childhood. And he has grown up to be a scientist and an author and speaker. And so they walk you through some of Earth's history, the history of our knowledge of the stars and space in the galaxy. The first episode really is kind of a good overview. And I'm enjoying a lot of it. The visuals are neat. Like it's cool to see this ship of the imagination, which is this imaginary kind of vessel that you travel around into, like show you all of these cool phenomena as they're happening, like black holes and blue stars and, you know, even going down to microscopic levels, you know, into the universe of a cell and all that kind of stuff. And it's all interesting. It's good information and I do enjoy the show, but I am not liking it as much as all of my other geeky friends.
I gotta agree with you there.
They gush
about
the show.
I've seen the first two episodes and I'm like, oh yeah, sure, I want to watch more of this, but some of it feels a little ham-fisted to me.
Oh, some of it is repetitive. It's like, you know, if you've watched the first episode, or if you're like me and you're watching them on a stream where I might watch two or three in a row as I'm sketching or, you know, something.
Right.
And it's the same information over again in a lot of places. And it starts to feel a little bit too much like a class. Like I don't need a review. I have everything at my fingertips. If I want to watch an episode again, I can just go back and watch it again. I don't need another episode to then recap the first three, you know?
Yeah, at certain points, I kind of felt like it was talking down to me.
Yes.
I was like, I know a lot of this stuff. You're not telling me anything I don't already know.
There's some stuff I did know. Other stuff, it was stuff I knew, but then building on that. And that I was, you know, that's I'm cool with. And I, you know, it's been a long time since I've thought about the solar system. So, the universe. So it was nice to kind of get a review and, you know, trying to figure out whether Pluto is still a planet and all that kind of stuff. I enjoyed the stuff about comets. Like I knew what they were. I didn't know where they came from, or I didn't remember where they came from. So, you know, it was very cool to see that kind of stuff. I do find that there are some very deliberate jabs at religion.
Yes.
Which, you know, doesn't bother me, but I was surprised. I was like, wow, you are asking for trouble.
Yeah. And I am a very non-religious person.
Yeah, the same.
But I was like, those jabs are going to drive away viewers.
Well, this is the thing, is you want to educate people. If that's the mission of this show, the idea would be to get it into as many eyeballs as possible and let them make up their own minds. Like that would be the high road, right?
Yes.
And there's definitely a couple of, I mean, like they're not blatant, but they really are kind of like a sideways. There's even like a little sideways glance sometimes at the camera and you're like, dude, really? Wow. I mean, I can't believe this is on television.
I do know that he is a strong atheist
in
real life.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm pretty sure that that's his point of view, because I think he's also an executive producer for the show.
Oh, probably, yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that that's, no, this is my show, I'm going to do it this way.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure there's probably a producer going, no, we should do this.
Well, I mean, the show is certainly speaking to the more scientific audience. Like, it's definitely not holding back, you know, and trying to, it's certainly not catering to everybody. It's accessible, but it's not catering. And you're right, though, in certain points, it does feel a little pandering, and I don't like the overdramatic delivery. If I want to watch acting, I will watch a show, an entertainment, you know, driven show. For documentaries, I just need someone that's very well spoken to deliver me the facts. Like you know, it could be anybody, it could be Patrick Stewart, could be, you know, insert actor I could listen to read the phone book here, Morgan Freeman, you know, whatever. And that's all great. But I don't need these dramatic pauses to say, you know, just how big this particular sun is or how heavy the gravity is. It would crush your brain in a millisecond. Like, I just tell me what I need to know. I don't need the overdramatic, you know, kind of like radio play, you know, with that kind of stuff. And I find that he speaks very slowly to the point where it's almost aggravating. And that to me has been a bit of an issue. So these are surface things about the show,
right,
that kind of rub you the wrong way. The content that they're presenting
is very good.
The value that they're presenting is very good. It's a long series too. Like, it's like 14 episodes or more. Like
14 or 15.
Yeah, like,
and it is on Netflix here in the U.S. as well.
Oh, cool.
Got added recently, yeah, like in the last couple weeks.
It's worth checking out. And certainly if you have kids, like, it's very educational. It would certainly be entertaining for them, because there's like little animated shorts in the middle. Whenever they talk about like history, they talk about like a scientist or an astronomer in history. One of the things that I thought was very cool was that he was talking about a series of astronomers and mathematicians at Princeton or Harvard. I can't remember which. And it was a female team, and they discovered like how to catalog the light from stars and how to figure out the age of stars. And they were working with, an associate professor who happened to be a dude, but he was always very forthcoming in making sure that everybody knew that it was like the woman responsible for writing paper X or paper, you know, Y was always given credit first, and then his name would be after theirs.
Right.
And I thought it was very cool that the show and that deGrasse Tyson had pointed out that, like, you know, here are some of the unsung heroes. Of science. And yes, he pointed out that this episode happened to deal with women, but he's been pointing out unsung heroes across the board, both women and men.
And
I thought it was nice that, like, everybody thinks, you know, Thomas Jefferson and, Thomas Jefferson was a, was he
president?
He was a president. Sorry, what am I looking for?
Edison,
thank you. So, you know, Thomas Edison, you've got, you know, Stephen Hawking, like there's all these prominent names that people think of, but then there's all these other guys, you know, like the guy that discovered that leaded gasoline was polluting the world, the ocean, and everybody, you know, on the planet. And I mean, I don't recall his name right now, but that's because I've never heard it before, you know, and
right.
This show spent a considerable amount of time telling this guy's story. And that's the kind of stuff that was really important. And I feel like as I continue to watch the series, I'll probably see more of that stuff tie in. So I will continue. It's just that I'm a little bit disappointed because my expectations were so high, given, like, you know, you and I share a lot of the same kind of podcasting friends that were just enamored with it. Like, they could not get enough.
Yeah.
And I was surprised that it wasn't quite as high hot as I thought it was going to be
I watched the first two episodes because they were on Hulu here in the States, and I watched the first two episodes. I was like, oh, this is cool, I'll get around to watching some more later. And then Hulu pulled everything because the entire season was out,
right?
And I was like, well, I guess I'll catch it on reruns.
Yeah.
And then it got added to Netflix, and it's been on my Netflix queue for a couple weeks. I've been like, I'll get around to it eventually.
Yeah, I mean, and you have to be in the right kind of mood to watch a documentary.
Right.
Like, I mean, you've had a long week and it's Friday night and you get some pizza and a beer. You don't necessarily want to learn stuff.
Yeah, and they put it on Sunday nights on TV.
Mm.
And it was like Sunday night would roll around and it would show up on my Hulu queue. And I'd be like, this isn't really what I want to watch on a Sunday night before I get ready to go back to work on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
This is not what I want to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I can certainly recommend something that is worth watching and was a very good, I want to say, not pilot episode, but at least first episode for me. And that's another Netflix show called Hinterland. And it's a BBC detective miniseries. It's on BBC One. And it stars, see if I can find the guy's name real quick. Because the main character is a investigator, like a CSI a DCI, I guess they call them in Britain.
Yeah.
And his character's name is Tom Mathias, and Richard Harrington is the actor that plays him. And then his next in command, DI Marid Rees, played by Mally Harris, is, or Harry's, I guess, is also very, very good. And the show is basically about a displaced detective, that's Matthias, that moves to Wales to then head up an investigative team. And I can't remember the name of the community that he's in, but it's a small town. So you get some very pretty picturesque, you know, scenes of Wales. But the crime and stuff that happens and what he's been looking into is really kind of unique. And they don't give you a lot of information. It's very well done in terms of, like, you're just kind of thrown into it. All of these people are witnessing Matthias's first day on the job, as are you. So you know about as much about him as they do. And that's right. How they leave it. They don't go into any kind of backstory. They just kind of give you little hints here and there through conversation with his coworkers as to what his history is. He's a bit of a brooding, quiet, you know, like introspective guy. And you kind of get this feeling that something happened, but you're not sure. You're kind of wondering why this guy is taking a position in the middle of nowhere. You know? Right.
This just showed up on Netflix here in the United States.
Oh, cool.
Netflix bought the rights to it here in the U.S., and this has been added to my queue just recently. I haven't had a chance to watch one yet, but I love BBC detective series, so I'm sold already.
Yeah. Well, and this is the thing. Like, it has the chops of Sherlock. Not quite as... The characters are not as lovable.
Right.
In that way, it's more like CSI. Like, the characters are interesting, but they're very professional. Like, there's no quirkiness whatsoever.
Yeah.
Not a funny show. It is a, it's, I don't want to say dark. It's very real. Something I enjoyed about watching the first episode, which is like an hour and a half. So they're all like little mini movies. Is that it gives you a reason for all of the things that happen, like all the bad things.
Yeah.
And there are reasons that make sense. Don't necessarily hit close to home, but you could easily picture it happening in your own neighborhood.
Yeah, people aren't necessarily two-dimensional.
Yeah, and evil people are not just born that way, you know, or there's a series of events that sculpt, you know, humanity, and that sometimes that leads to people being criminals. And it was a very interesting kind of route that they took. They don't smack you over the head with anything. Again, a lot of this comes from people that are fans of British kind of miniseries would be kind of expecting this to be pretty well written.
Yeah.
You know, I will definitely keep on watching it. Like, it's gritty, it's grounded. Don't expect to escape into it and feel good though. Like, it's not, you know, Arrow or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or the OC, like, where it's drama, but then, you know, there's still some sort of happy bits. It's pretty, you kind of feel depressed when you're done with it. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just that it's not an uplifting show. You know, it's not escapism entertainment. It's a whodunit page turner mystery with some really deep characters, so far, or at least it appears that they're pretty deep characters. So I'm looking forward to checking out more of it on Netflix. Right on. Well, that brings me into my listening pick this week, and it happens to be a podcast, not unlike this one, but also unlike this one. Mm-hmm. This is someone who's become a bit of an industry friend. A few months ago, the guys over at Comics Coast to Coast and myself interviewed Tom Bancroft, and Tom is a former Disney animator. He has worked on all kinds of stuff. Most notably, he is the character designer behind Mushu, the dragon from Mulan, the one that Eddie Murphy voiced.
Mm-hmm.
So, and his brother, Tony, a twin brother, is also a Disney vet. He was actually the director on, or co-director on Mulan. And he's been on other projects like Lion King and other things that are just too long to mention. And they, of course, have a lot of friends pretty high up in the animation industry. And funded by Tom's education site, Taught by a Pro, they've put together the Bancroft Brothers Animation Podcast. And they are talking to friends of theirs in the industry like Aaron Blaze and Don Han. Don Han, if you don't know, was a producer in the Disney heydays of Beauty and the Beast, Lion King, Hunchback of Notre Dame, Emperor's New Groove. Like, this guy had his hand in a lot of very cool projects, and is an artist himself as well, and is now making like nature documentaries or something. They cover the guy's entire career. The shows are, I want to say they're about an hour. They keep them timed. But there's great rapport. It's their first podcast, and they're absolute naturals. It's entertaining. If you at all are interested in modern animation history, so it only goes kind of back to whoever's alive, you know, like, so if someone right now is kind of in their 50s, then they would have been working at an animation studios about 30 years ago. And then, so some of the animators that were working there would have been in their 50s or 60s, so that it can get back. Some of the stories can get pushed back to like Sleeping Beauty days, but not a lot of people that worked on that are still around. So it's kind of like this not telephone, but this stories that have been passed on throughout animation history. And it was very, very cool to listen to the Don Hahn interview, just because I grew up watching Lion King and all those kind of movies. So to hear a lot of the behind the scenes of how it was made, and listen to a little bit, you know, about the person artistically and what their missions were and how they ended up where they were. It's not just like art speak all the time. They get into like, you know, personal stuff and whatever, but, you can find it, on Top Eye Pro. I believe it's just TopEyePro.com/podcasts, TopEyePro.com/category/podcasts. And there'll be a link in the show notes, but if you look up Bancroft Brothers on Google, you'll be able to find it. It's also available on iTunes. They did have a Patreon page, but they've moved over to Top Eye Pro because I think it was kind of a conflict of interest. But anyway, it's a good show. I highly recommend it.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah, give it a go. I mean, even if you're not, you know, an artist, you still might find it interesting.
Well, I grew up on all those cartoons and movies, so I definitely will find some kind of appreciation for it.
Yeah, and it's not all history talk. Like, they talk about what's happening in the industry right now. Like, they started talking about what Disney is doing, what Marvel's doing. The Box Trolls is coming out, and they're all really excited about that. So they touch on what's happening now, too, which is cool. Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute, which is sponsored by Tweaked Audio. The Citadel Cafe is proudly sponsored by TweakedAudio.com. They are sellers of high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds. Visit TweakedAudio.com. Use the code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. And we would like to thank Tweaked Audio for their support. Well, my pick this week is going to be super quick, comic-related. We've kind of had a comic-themed show, it's about Batgirl comics. Comixology has got a sale on Batgirl comics, and almost everything that they are selling is 99 cents, which can be as much as 75% off.
Nice.
Yeah, you cannot miss it. So, I mean, something as long as like a year one edition or something that's, you know, 60, 80 pages, which is a $3.99 book, is a dollar. And you can easily chew up stories from like Gail Simone and other noted authors of comic books. There's lots of different artists that have touched this. Looks like some great spot covers. Not that that really matters, I guess, for iPad. But if you're into, you know, collecting stuff and you wanted to try and read some of these issues before you go out and buy them to see if they're worth, you know, picking up, there's some very cool stuff here. And the art looks super fun. Batgirl's kind of had a resurgence lately, and I thought it was worth passing on. Not very often DC comics go on sale for as much as 75% off. You'll get more like 25. You'll get the reverse more often than not. Sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say Comixology. Sometimes their sales scare me.
Yeah, I have to sometimes be careful because I want to read some Batgirl comics, but I don't really. You know, everything's only a dollar, but like I'm looking at everything and I could spend $60 here in a heartbeat.
See, that's how they get me. I'll be honest. I'm not huge into the digital comics. I really like to be able to flip pages. Mm-hmm. And I like my comics in graphic novel form if I can get it. But when Comixology offers something and it's like, no, it's 50 cents an issue. I'm like, all right, I can give up the tactile feel for 50 cents. I can do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's 37 different items at a dollar for just the regular issues. Wow. Then there's another, I don't know, there's got to be another 32 maybe that look like they might be larger editions, crossovers, stuff like that. Like, so you can, if you get it hooked on a storyline, you could easily follow it through. And storylines in comics don't usually go much before 6 to 10 books. Like, yeah, that's kind of a stretch. Because if these were monthlies, you're looking at, 6 to 8 months, for a storyline. You could spend $8 or $10 and get a good story. And you can't miss it. Just go to comixology.com. There's a huge banner that says Batgirl sale, 99 cents. Check it out. It is only on until, I want to say, the end of the week. Begins 9/23. It's now the 25th. So that was Tuesday, and it goes for 7 days. So it goes over the weekend, but that's kind of it. So, what about you, sir?
Well, my pick for the Internet Minute here is something I heard about an hour before we started recording. So there is a Kickstarter for a game called Bedlam, and it is a mix of FTL, XCOM, and another game called The Banner Saga.
Okay. What's FTL? Just so.
Okay, FTL stands for Faster Than Light.
Okay.
And the game FTL is basically your starship, and you need to get across the galaxy and deliver a message that an invading rebel army is coming.
Okay.
And everything is random. Your encounters are random. Your battles are random, and everything is kind of like point A to point B, and it's a race against time. And you start out with like 2 crew members and a junkie ship. And as you travel, you'll buy parts for your ship, buy upgrades, then jump to the next planet, then jump to the next planet, then jump to the next galaxy. And you eventually make your way to basically your home world. And then the Banner Saga is like a story-driven game where you're like a bunch of dwarves and giants and humans on a trail in a world where there is no moon. It's always sunny, and like the gods are dying, and it's like it's a march to basically find out what's at the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then XCOM is a turn-based squad strategy game where you're battling an invading alien army against the Earth. And so basically, Bedlam is post-apocalyptic, and everybody is in what's called a dozer. And a dozer is like a giant tank that people live inside. And you're in a dozer that's on a journey across the wastelands. And every few steps, you run into an encounter. And the encounter can be raiders or other soldiers. And basically, it looks like it's going to be squad-based combat between you and your people. It looks very interesting. It's got some neat animation.
I'm looking at the art right now. It looks fun.
It's very different. There isn't a whole lot like it out there. So if you like video games and you've played FTL or XCOM, it might be worth looking at. I rarely donate any money to Kickstarter just because I'm always afraid I'm going to get burned. Mm-hmm. But this one has really tempted me.
Wow. Cool. And it just started. It's still got 29 days to go.
Yeah, it just started today.
And some of their early adopter stuff is already sold out.
Yeah.
Very, very
their
cool.
Goal is to be at $130,000 by the end of the month. And they're already at $12,000 and they just started today.
Oh, wow. Brand new. Well, good for them. It looks like it's a fun game. They've obviously put a lot of work into it. Like it's not a haphazard. It's not a haphazard Kickstarter. Like very detailed.
And I think they've already gotten far enough along in their project. They're saying September of next year.
Next year, wow.
So like a year away. And yeah, that normally when you see these Kickstarters, they're like, yeah, it's 2 years away.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like a year away. So
yeah, game development takes a long time.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Cool, man. Much appreciated. I love Kickstarter stuff. I always enjoy the Kickstarter newsletters, like, here's what we think is cool. And I always find something really interesting, in there. And I flag it and I read it kind of like before I go to bed or whenever I have time. And there's always such neat projects, especially art projects, be it games, that involve you know, art production or other stuff. I find it very cool.
Over on Zombies Ate My Podcast, we interviewed a guy that did a Kickstarter for a bunch of zombie mugs. Way back when we first started the show, he reached out to us and wanted, it was like, hey, I'm trying to promote this. Would you be interested in interviewing me? And we were like, sure. And we really didn't, we just kind of started. We'd only been doing it like maybe it was like our sixth episode. And it was like, it went really well. And he was a really nice guy. And his Kickstarter did succeed. And he made a bunch of zombie mugs. But he was explaining to us the process of all the things he had to do. And I was like, wow, that sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I mean, the projects themselves are huge passion projects. I mean, they're big, big ordeals to take on. But a Kickstarter campaign in general, like, I mean, I've done a social campaign. I did an Indiegogo for my book.
Yep.
And it takes a lot out of you. It is a very stressful, you know, 15 to 30 days, depending on how long you have it up there, with a lot of your blood, sweat, and tears on the line in terms of, like, success and what you think is success and whether the world thinks you're successful. Like, it puts a lot of pressure on you. And when you're doing something for $130,000 or more, like, oof, I don't even want to think about it. I just don't, you know, I mean, that's the kind of thing where you get somebody else to run the Kickstarter because it would be just too personal. It'd be too stressful. You know,
yeah.
You'd want to have like budget for a marketing guy or something to really take care of the day to day and be involved, but not have it all on you because man, you know, it's just a lot of pressure.
Definitely. But if you like those games, take a look at this.
Cool. What was it called again?
Bedlam.
Bedlam. Bedlam. Search it on Kickstarter. Just started today. From Skyshine Games, I think is their company.
Yes. And I believe they're brand new.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Citadel Cafe. We normally record live on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern on the citadelcafe.com/live. The mobile audio stream for those shows is also provided by Alpha Geek Radio when I can get my stupid software to work. We missed the show last night. Sorry about that, folks, but hopefully I will have it all sorted out again next week. Famous last words. If you happen to have the TuneIn app on your mobile device of choice, you can also listen to Alpha Geek Radio in the app. Just search for Alpha Geek Radio and tune in whenever a show is on that you want to listen to. Music from the show is, of course, composed by Kevin MacLeod. And the episode will be on demand at your leisure on iTunes and, of course, thecitadelcafe.com. Email the show and tell Lou and I how wrong we were at thecitadelcafe.com thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. There's too many .coms. If you just go to the website, there's buttons to just give us feedback and kick us in the shins. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook, just the show name. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I'm up to online at joelduggan.com. Please do check out my Patreon page, which is in desperate need of update. I'm going to be including the Citadel Cafe in Patreon from now on as part of my creative output for the month. So you can look forward to some new posts from me there, as well as hopefully, knock on wood, a video sometime in the next 2 to 3 weeks as I need to update all that kind of stuff. You can find StarCrossed at starcrossedonline.com, and my Twitter handle is just my name. At Joel Duggan. Lou, where can people find you and your brains online?
The easiest way to find me is I am at Busy Zombie Lord on Twitter, and you can check out my show at zombiesatemypodcast.com, and we're also on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you can find podcasts, I'm pretty sure.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two. You guys have some pretty nifty t-shirts.
Yes, we do. And you can find those at Slash Loot.
Great place to find t-shirts. I've got one where a dragon is puking his guts out, and that's on Slash Loot as well.